Hey, welcome to Mondays with Ryan, formerly known as, what do we call this show? The Morning After Show? I don't even know anymore. Conan Hensley, Ryan G. Hensley, Grant L. Cone. Ryan's looking a little red today. I'm looking a little pale as always, man. How you doing?
I'm good. I don't know why. I look like a tomato head. Dude.
It's all right.
I don't know.
You look good, though.
I like this show better because it kind of reminds me of The Morning After Pill, the old show name. It was kind of a good show.
Maybe that's why I changed the name. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So today we're gonna talk about Brock Purdy today because we feel like he isn't getting talked about at all this offseason, and it's not fair. Like, he's the kid sitting in the back of the class trying to avoid getting called on. So now we're talking about you today. We're gonna save that to the end because there is news. Brock Purdy, we're gonna start with him, and D'Amador Lenore have gotten bonuses more than $700,000 each for their stellar play last season. This seems like the least the team and the league could do. Given that they really are underpaid, but at least they got something.
Yeah, for Purdy, it's like doubling his salary. I think it was like damn near. He had a bonus of $739,795, which is damn near what he got paid. So I think it's good that they did that. And then Lenore got a little more, $790,000. They're basically rewarding lower salary players who get a ton of snaps and contribute to the success of the team. I think it's a good thing that they do that because Brock's definitely underpaid, probably Demo as well, to be real. So yeah, it's good. Good for them.
It's all Jamarcus Russell's fault. People don't remember Jamarcus Russell. He got a lot of money. He was like the last guy before the rookie wage scale, and Raiders gave him a lot of money, and he bought a fat mansion not too far down the street from my dad's house, who doesn't live in a mansion, but he was sort of the talk. To his credit, he bought a house in the Oakland Hills, which I thought was pretty cool. But no, he wasn't really working too hard, apparently, allegedly, Jamarcus Russell. And, you know, the owners got really upset and they're like, there's no way these kids should be the highest paid players in the league. And so they have this rookie wage scale, which is just kind of unfair. And so someone like Lenore and Purdy, who have completely transcended rookie status and shown that they're quality starting players in the NFL, as good as any vets, they should be getting compensated accordingly. But it's all Jamarcus's fault.
Yeah, shout out to Jamarcus.
Shout out to Oakland Jamarcus.
Hills, huh? You remember that big fire in the Oakland Hills? I don't know.
It was more north of where I grew up. That was closer to the Caldecott Tunnel. And Jamarcus was more like on the other side, like down by Golf Links.
Dude, true story. I was driving through the tunnel going towards Oakland.
When that happened,
I come out of the tunnel and there's like fire on both sides of me. I'm like,
damn.
It was wild. Yeah.
I remember that day. I was 3 years old. I was going to a birthday party and they canceled it. I was pissed.
Ruined the whole birthday party.
Why are we not going to the birthday party? They're like, there's a fire in the hills. I was like, that sounds terrible. But what about this birthday party though?
Yeah.
With the cake.
Yeah. Priorities.
It's over.
You're three.
What a tragedy.
Yeah, man. But yeah, I think it's a good thing that they do that. I mean, because really, if you think about it, teams could, and they could do it to Brandon Ayuk if they really wanted to. They could keep him on his rookie pay scale, exercise a fifth-year option, franchise tag him, and then move on from him, get, you know, 6 years out of a rookie. So it's tough. I mean, they could do the same thing for Purdy if they really wanted to. Not that it would be good for chemistry and all of that, but you know, he deserves it. Brock Purdy is probably the most underpaid player in the NFL. So he deserves it. And Lenore too, man.
Let's talk about collective bargaining agreements real quick. Stuff Niner fans love. I think what's going on with the young players is really wrong. Everyone sticks up for, you know, college football players. What about these guys on their rookie wage scale? Like, Brock Purdy be making more money in college. Like, it's more of a free market in college. You can make whatever. With the NIL stuff, but here it's like, sorry, buddy, you got to wait one more year before you can renegotiate. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I think, and what sucks is they're never going to change this because the people who negotiate on behalf of the players are the vets.
Mm-hmm. And they're looking out for the vets.
Oh, they love this. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, and it's kind of unfair. I mean, if you look at baseball, you look at basketball, the NFL, those guys are the most underpaid players. Out of all of them. And they risk the most and they have very short careers. I believe the average NFL career is 2.5 years. Right. I know NFL players that played in the NFL and were broke 6 months later. So it does kind of suck, and I'm happy for Purdy and Lenore. I hope they renegotiate it, but you're right. It's really about they're looking out for the veterans, these guys. Yeah.
All the rules benefit the veterans. Like less practice time. Who does that benefit? The players who need development or the players who've already developed?
Yeah.
And don't need people taking their jobs, right?
Right. Right.
Right.
So it makes a lot of sense. I mean, for some guys that might want to take, spend a little more time in college, get that NIL money if you're balling off of it. I mean, like Sanders is the quarterback Sanders, man. He just bought his dad a house. Yeah. In Colorado, and he's still in college. Right. So I think there's going to be a point at some point where some of these kids are like, I might as well just stay in college.
Right.
You know, what's the difference? Yeah. So
if you're not a first round pick, why are you really leaving?
Right.
You know,
if you're making good NIL money, and a lot of that is just about personality and charisma and your social media presence. A lot of those guys might make more in college than they will in the NFL. So yeah, I think it's good that they rewarded these guys. They need to really figure that stuff out more. I wish the NFL did a little better job. Like I'm not sure if the rules have changed. Maybe I'm naive to it, but these guys really deserve health care for their life.
Yep.
You know,
it's true.
And I don't think
they call
that right now.
These two players are in this weird position where it's like they're both gonna be in line for major paydays in a year.
Yep.
But for one more year, until then, they both have to play for nothing, essentially, like minimum wage. And a lot of when we were kids, remember Maurice Claret? He was great as a freshman, and then he's like, "I'm not playing anymore. I'm trying to go to the NFL." It's like a lot of times players are afraid to put their body on the line for no reward when they have so much to gain down the line. So they have to stay healthy. My goodness, D'Amador, Lenore, Brock Purdy, stay healthy. Lenore can make a lot of money too.
He should have already. I think we're going to talk about that later, but I definitely want to talk about Demo because I'm a little surprised by something in regards to 49ers and Demo.
Because, I mean, if you think about it, all the players who are due for extensions next year, Purdy's big one, but also Lenore, Tre'Varius Ward, Talanoa Hufanga, Aaron Banks. There's a bunch. Juwan Jennings is going to be up for extension again next year. Yeah. There's a whole – I'm sure I missed three or four guys.
It's going to be this. I think I've been saying it for a while, and I think everyone has because it's kind of obvious. This year is kind of, you know, the last running back year. There's going to be some major changes after 2024. And we'll talk about more of those.
Jesus M says Lenore is not that good. Is that true? Let's look at his numbers. Last year, he gave up a quarterback rating of 75, targeted 95 times, gave up 60 catches. 687 yards and one touchdown. He also had three picks. He's a pretty good player. Could play outside, play inside, good tackler.
And you brought up the most important thing at the end. He's a little mini Greenlaw out there. He's an enforcer. He tries to hurt you when he tackles you, and that's valuable. I think a lot of people don't realize that. I mean, look at the Eagles game. What he did to I forget whoever he laid out, but he laid a dude out. It was the end of the game. They whooped the Eagles a whole game, and then that hit just kind of put the icing on the cake, man. I love Debo, man. I think he's great. I disagree with you, Jesus.
Yeah, I disagree with you. Jesus, Jeffrey Franco says, what's your 49ers web zone usernames? This is a good question because I definitely do have 49ers web zone usernames that I used in high school and college. So that's back from 2004 to 2010. And you know what? I have no idea what I said back then. So I'm not going to incriminate myself. Sorry. You'll have to figure that one out for yourself. I don't think I said anything bad, but probably things that were wrong in hindsight. So sorry, Jeffrey.
I'm assuming that's a website. I've never been on it, to be honest. Never.
The web's on?
Never.
Man, it's old school. It's old school. Okay. The run defense was the issue last year. It was so bad, it almost cost them the NFC Championship game. It was putrid at times. And the Niners seemed to make it their business to address defense this offseason. They overhauled the defensive line. They brought in players at all three levels of the defense. Mm-hmm. But is the run defense improved? Is it better? Devondre Campbell, Leonard Floyd, Malik Collins. What do you think?
I think it has improved, actually. And I think that's a big reason why the 49ers wanted to move on from Arik Armstead. For what they were paying him, the production and the availability they got from him was subpar for his contract. Arik Armstead last year had 15 solo tackles, 12 assists, and 5 sacks. He missed, what, 6 games, something like that? Mm-hmm. I don't know how many games he missed. He missed quite a bit. They replaced him with 2 guys, right? So Malik Collins is basically going to be your passing down defensive tackle. He had 7 sacks last year, which is what greater than what Armstead had. But Malik Collins also had 22 solo tackles and 11 assists, which is a greater total than Armstead just by himself. But when you look at who they really brought in for run defense is Jordan Elliott, who's going to probably be in on rushing downs. He ranked 6th amongst all defensive tackles for ESPN's run block rate statistic. So he's an upgrade over Arik Armstead against the run. He had 14 solo tackles, 7 assists, 2.5 sacks. He's not really a pass rushing defensive tackle, but he's there as the run defense specialist. So I think they probably actually improved. If both of those guys are healthy, they are better combined than Arik Armstead is by himself. And I also expect the 49ers to grab a defensive tackle in the draft. So I think they are going to be better. I think that was the goal. Obviously, that was the biggest weakness with the 49ers this past season defensively. And I think they purposely sought out guys that are good against the run and also healthy.
Yeah, healthy's good. I'm not sure how much Leonard Floyd's going to help against the run, but he'll play harder than Chase Young. Like, I just think it was so funny that Chase Young's name is Chase.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah.
I mean, can Leonard Floyd set an edge? I don't know, but he could chase. He could run the guy down from.
Right.
It's behind
ironic.
Yeah, it's it is. So,
no diddy.
Yeah. He got better on the edge against the run for sure. I think losing Armstead hurts, but he's hurt most of the time, so they didn't necessarily get worse. Like, Armstead and Kinlaw both have chronic injuries. Mm-hmm. Even when they're on the field, you don't really know what percentage of health they're at. The guys they have seem like at least they don't have that. My issue is, or my question is, linebacker, Vondre Campbell. I mean, the Dre Greenlaw injury hurts. He's such a good run defender. He's their hardest hitter. He's their most violent player. He's more of an enforcer, like downhill between the tackles and Warner. I don't know when he's coming back. And it seems like the Niners' attitude is he'll be back soon. I don't know. Devondre Campbell, they said he's good against the pass. Okay. But against the run, Green Bay was awful last year. They gave up like 2,100 yards on the ground, almost 2,200 yards on the ground. Campbell was a big problem. And now he's gone.
Yeah.
So, they got to get another linebacker.
Or
one of those two, they have to step up.
And there's always Graham and Bell? Not Bell. Is it Bell? I'm trying to remember. Winners. Right?
Winners.
There's always Graham.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And Winners, right? So maybe those guys step it up in their second year for the 49ers. So that's also a thing. But I think one of the real things here, Grant, the reason why the 49ers, one of the things they mentioned, the reason why they moved on from Steve Wilks is because they're saying he wasn't matching the front 7 with the coverage. And maybe part of the reason why the 49ers struggled against the run could have been schematic. I don't know how much of that I believe, but the 49ers did mention that was a big part of the reason why they let him go. So maybe the schematics of the way they ran their defense last year had something to do with it as well. I'm not sure. We'll see how it plays out with the guys they put in place now, but I know that the 49ers probably think it had something to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand. I understand using the wide 9, like if your pass rush is just incredible and you got to say like, well, this is part of why the pass rush is incredible, but it wasn't.
Right.
At all.
It wasn't.
I mean, it was just mediocre to subpar last year and the run defense was mediocre to subpar. So why not try something else when this, you know, they say if it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's broken.
Yeah, obviously.
Fix it.
It's the worst 49ers run defense they've had, what, since 2018, 2017? Yeah. So it's been real bad. And they gave up the most rushing yards out of every team in the playoffs last year. It's actually amazing that they made the Super Bowl. If teams were more keen to that, they probably would have ran more. It's the biggest problem on the 49ers defense. I think that's part of the reason they moved on from Wilkes, and I think that's why they were ready to move on from Armstead. Paying him all that money with that production and that availability, well, never made sense. And I'm hoping that Jordan Elliott, Malik Collins combination is an upgrade over Eric Armstead. I'm hoping it will be.
Yeah. All right, what about the secondary, though? I mean, after this year, the only starter who's going to be who's going to be under contract is Jair Brown. What are the Niners planning here? Like, are they going to let all these guys go? Are they going to draft more DBs now to give them options? It seems like Hufanga could be expensive. Lenore could be expensive. Tre'Davious Ward could be expensive. All free agents after this year.
I'm really surprised that D'Amador Lenore hasn't been extended already. That's the biggest one for me. With Tre'Davious Ward, he's kind of an older dude. He's going to be 30 at some point this coming season.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand them like being a little wait and see on Tre'Davious Ward. Even though he's been great up to this point, he's getting a little up there. But D'Amador Lenore is young. I feel like if they would have jumped on it early, they probably could have got a discount. He's really good, in my opinion. I disagree with Jesus. I think D'Amador Lenore is a stud, man. Somebody that I want to keep around. And then if you look at it, you brought it up. You only got one defensive back scheduled to be here past next year, and that's Jair Brown. You got Huff, Tre'Davious Ward, and Demo all going to be free agents after this coming season. That could get really expensive next season, and they might have to revamp. So this leads me to believe that they're going to be going after a safety in a corner in the draft. I would be surprised. I mean, there's talk about them looking at Julian Blackman?
Mm-hmm.
As a safety, signing him. That nothing has transpired with that. Maybe it still will. But the 49ers got to get some guys under contract past this year. Right now, they just have Jair Brown. I'm surprised they haven't extended Demo. That would have freed up close to $2 million for the 49ers had they done that. Maybe they tried, and Demo and his agent were like, no. Because Demo, if he waits and he plays out this year and he has another good year like he had this year, he's going to get the bag from some team, and it may not be the 49ers. But it is an area of concern, weakness for the 49ers at this point, just because there's nobody under contract past this year.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the way they do it. I mean, they want to go cheap in the secondary. Tre'Davious Ward was one of their biggest signings in a while, and he wasn't that expensive. They want to build through the defensive line. They've said it publicly a million times. So I could see, you know, like when Emmanuel Mosley was time to pay him, it's like they didn't have it. Sorry. D'Amelio Lenore, we ain't got it. Talanoa Hufanga, you want more than $3 million a year? Sorry. Where they're at.
I love Huff, all pro stud, but he doesn't really fit well in the scheme next to Jair Brown. They're basically the same player, and Jair Brown's a little better in coverage, if I'm being real. Yeah. So they need to find a free safety. So I understand that part, but when you prioritize positions in the NFL, to me, it's obviously quarterback. Everybody agrees on that. Then it's offensive line, which 49ers don't really prioritize. They prioritize defensive end over offensive line, according to them. Yeah. It's not my opinion. It's things they've said. But for me, it's quarterback, offensive line, and it's a toss-up between corner and DN, because if you have really good corners, that improves your DNs. So I don't agree with that philosophy. Those are the priority positions, and it's honestly a little concerning about the future not having those guys locked down.
I feel like the back end is more important than the front end, and I know most people disagree with that, but I think people are starting to come around to it, because look at the Ravens last year. What you can do with a pass rush, you can what's the word? You can create the pass rush. You don't necessarily just have to let four guys do it all on their own. Like, you can have all kind of different ways to rush four guys. Like, the Ravens showed that. Plus, you have like eight, you go eight deep on the D-line. You don't necessarily need one guy to play 100% of the snaps. But in the secondary, you're not really – your safeties play 100% of the snaps. Your starting corners play 100% of the snaps. You can't hide them.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's where the term coverage sack comes from, right?
Yeah.
There's a reason people say that, because if you have really good coverage, it creates opportunity for your pass rush. It's hard to
– Manufacture was the word I was looking for. Manufacture a pass rush. You can do it.
Yeah, I couldn't think of the word physics this morning on my show, this morning with Croc. So
frustrating.
But no, like, it's hard to figure out what comes first, the chicken or the egg, right? Is it the coverage that helps the pass rush? The pass rush helps the coverage. It's probably a little bit of both. But I think if you're only focusing on one of those things, then you leave the other exposed and you make like, right. If you're only focused on pass rush and you don't focus on your corners, your DBs, your coverage, then you're making it harder for that pass rush that you're paying all this money for. So to me, it's really a toss up between corners and pass rushers. Like it's hard for me to figure out what's more important, but like you said, if the coverage is really good, you know, you can run stunts and scheme up blitzes and whatever you need to get after the quarterback. I honestly lean in the direction you said, which is the DBs are more important. That's why I'm concerned, because I feel like D'Amador Lenore is a young stud, man. And I feel like if they would have locked him down a little earlier, they probably could have saved a lot of money. He's going to get a lot if he becomes a free agent. Ward's getting older. I feel like Demo is a no-brainer. Save yourself $2 million, lock him down, and then you don't have so many holes to fill after this coming season, and it won't be so expensive for you. But maybe they got a plan. I think one of those plans is they're going to draft somebody this year.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because right now they got, beyond this year, they got Jair Brown, Terrell Luter Jr.
Yeah. His number is Sam Womack.
Sam Womack. That's not.
Yeah. No, I've seen flashes from Womack. Like, he seems to be
he seems to be in great position when he gives up the 50-yard catch. Like, he's right there.
I think his size hurts him a little bit, but he's quick. And he seems, you know, he's an opportunist. He seems to be around the ball in the right place. But yeah, I think his size overall makes coverage a little difficult. Or Womack.
Is he that much smaller than Lenore? Maybe an inch.
Maybe, but I don't see him as a guy who's ever going to be a starter. I hate to say that, Womack. So 49ers need to go after find somebody in this draft. They might do in the first round, honestly, if Kool-Aid McKinstry is available. There are a lot of people saying he might fall to 31 because of his foot injury. He's a very talented player and could be a top two corner on a team. So maybe that's the route they go.
I would not be surprised if they take a DB in round one. They've been flirting with DBs in free agency. We just laid out the situation. They always plan a year ahead in the draft because Kyle Shanahan would prefer not to play any rookies. I mean, I think he takes pride in having a team that's so good that rookie couldn't possibly contribute. Even when he realizes on day four of training camp that his seventh round pick rookie is the best quarterback on the team, he still won't play him. Because that's just the kind of coach he is. But he saw it.
That's another reason. Yeah, I mean, you brought up a good point, too. Like, they plan a year ahead. Another reason why I think they're going to draft. They will. Mark this down. I think the 49ers draft a wide receiver in the first four, maybe five rounds. But at least five. But they're going to draft a wide receiver early, too, because they have to plan ahead for not being able to pay Debo and Brandon Ayuk after this year. I don't see that as a possibility either. So, yeah, maybe that's the approach they take with corner.
Yeah. All right. Let's do some sleeper picks because it's baseball season.
Baseball.
It's baseball time. Yeah, the Warriors played what? They played yesterday?
Yes, they played the Spurs yesterday.
And they beat the Spurs.
Yeah, Spurs are
excited.
Yes.
That's exciting. We're gonna talk about the Warriors in a little bit.
Yeah. Spurs are gonna be good eventually. They got some good young talent.
Eventually they will. I agree. But the Giants are playing the Dodgers tonight, 7-10.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make some picks, man. I'm trying to watch these April baseball games because what else is there to do?
I watched my first Giants game yesterday, and it wasn't good. They got to get rid of whatever pitchers they had out there. I'll be honest, my picks today are going to be completely ignorant, but I'll do my best.
I feel like basketball picks are pretty. They feel easier because you know the guys are going to rack up stats. But like Matt Chapman, am I really going to pick him to hit a home run? That's pretty random.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's tough.
I got to figure out my baseball pick strategy here.
They'll probably bounce back against the Dodgers. Dodgers are a good team, though. So take that for what it's worth. I don't know. I
like Chapman because when he's in the batter's box, he looks just like Jeff Kent. Doesn't he?
Like who?
Jeff Kent.
Ah, yeah.
He's got the same stance.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say one hit for Chapman because I'm a fan now.
I agree.
Boom. That's one pick. Let's make two more.
All right. Who's pitching?
We got this guy, Keaton Wynn. What do we know about Keaton Wynn? Not much.
Not a damn thing. What's the guy that's in trouble? What's the guy in trouble for gambling right now on the Dodgers? There he is.
Right there. Oh, hey, it wasn't his. It wasn't his. It was interpreter. Yeah,
it wasn't his
interpreter.
It was not him. No, it was his interpreter.
How about Keaton Wynn? More than 3.5 strikeouts.
Sounds feasible.
I think he could get 4 Ks.
Yeah, I loved baseball when I was a kid, man. I was actually a pitcher. I was pretty good when I was younger. I peaked when I was like 12, but I was good.
For real?
Yeah, man.
You peaked when you were 12?
Benicia Little League. Yeah, I was pretty malnourished in high school. I was malnourished in high school, and I had bad grades, so it wasn't the best time for me for sports.
Malnourished? Well, how much do you weigh?
At the time, I'm 6'3", and I'm like 220 right now. I could probably lose 10 pounds, but in high school, I was same height, and I weighed like 170, 175. It's pretty bony kid.
Me too. Weren't we all? I was malnourished.
You know what I ate every day for lunch?
Tell me.
Grandma's fudge cookie and a Mountain Dew. That's breakfast. I'd have no breakfast, eat that for lunch, and then go to practice and wonder why I was feeling dizzy.
Yeah, I would do the same, except it was a few chicken wings from Safeway and maybe a Capri Sun, because I had to pack it myself and I didn't think ahead. And maybe the potatoes from the Safeway hot bar too, but that was about it.
Right.
All right, I'm locking my sleeper picks in because I'm good at this. Chapman getting a hit, Keaton Wynn, and then Corey Seager getting a hit plus a run plus an RBI, because I'm feeling good about Corey Seager. He's a good player.
Tons of game. I need to catch up on my giant. All right. I'm watching it.
All right. Boom. Let's talk Brock Purdy, because that's what the show's supposed to be about. Let's give the top 5 reasons that Brock Purdy is going to ball out this season.
Yeah, man. You know what? I was really thinking. I had a good conversation with a buddy of mine. Went to my son's track meet, and we were talking about Brock Purdy and how the most important thing in sports is really your mentality. It's your mindset, and Brock's mindset is one of the best I've seen in a long time. No BS. Like, the ability to come in as a 7th round draft pick, take over and have the confidence and the swagger and to be able to process the way they figure out the offense. To me, Brock Purdy's mind is one of the top 5 reasons why Brock will ball out this coming season. I mean, your mental is more important than anything physical. So I think that's a real big reason why I expect Brock to do really well again this year. Second one, man, he's healthy.
Yeah.
What's impressive about Brock Purdy last season is what he was able to do coming off a UCL injury. Like, I didn't even necessarily think he was going to be available for week one, but he was there in training camp, and he seemed to somehow improve over year one despite having a UCL injury. This year he's healthy, has an entire offseason. So that's another reason why I think so. The other thing is his confidence. Confidence, aggression, mentality, those are some of the most important things you can have in sports. If you're not confident, you're not going to be really good at anything in sports. You have to be confident, especially at this level. And Brock Purdy's confidence is next level. It's one of his strongest assets to be able to come into the team and tell George Kittle he talks too much and command the huddle the way Brock Purdy has. Another reason I think Brock Purdy is going to continue to ball out. Continuation, right? The continuation of being able to play with the same guys. It's basically the same team, same offensive line, same running back, most likely same receivers if BA comes back, same offense, same George Kittle. It's a lot of continuation, right? It's just more of the same, and he's had a lot of practice doing it more so than he did last year. And then the last reason 5 why I think Brock Purdy's going to ball out, it's a contract year, man. If dude balls out this year, I mean, whether he gets paid this coming season is entirely dependent on this year. If he comes out and plays the same way he did this past year, stays healthy, the same or even better, he's going to make life-changing money for his entire family. So those are 5 reasons why I think Brock Purdy's going to put it all together and ball the hell out this year.
Yeah, those are great reasons. I mean, there's so many reasons to think that Brock Purdy will ball out. He's still not making much money. He's still on a really good team. He's still got a good offensive coach who's elite for like 99.9% of the season until, well, you guys know. But that has nothing to do with Brock. And I would agree. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to think that he's going to ball out this year. There's some reasons to think that he won't. We can get into that a little later, but I don't want to get negative yet.
Yeah,
I just want to bask in the hope and dreams of him actually winning the MVP this year. I think he can do it. Why not?
Here's the thing, man. Like, I was really thinking about, like, we all know I doubted Brock Purdy after year one, a little Jimmy G, PTSD. I saw Brock coming in. He wasn't really taking those deep shots very often. I think he had, what, 6 passes over, what was it, 20 or 30 yards, something like that. He didn't really go deep. He was dinking and dunking. I thought it was another Jimmy. And then the next year he comes out and he's one of the best deep ball passers in the NFL. He has, not that he's going to throw 65 yards, but he can throw those 35, 40-yard passes just fine with anticipation. Brock Purdy is impressive as hell, dude. Like, when you really think about, I'm not talking about physical, his physical side. He's quick in the pocket, elusive, which is great, especially if you have a trash O-line. But he is just mentally has it. Like,
yeah.
You would struggle to find a quarterback in the NFL right now. Like, name me one. Well, what quarterback in the NFL right now has a better mental makeup than Brock Purdy? I mean, there's some that would have similar, like Patrick Mahomes, obviously. I'm going to put him above everybody else. But outside of Mahomes, who has a better mental makeup? I'm not talking about the physical things, the mental makeup.
Yeah, Brock Purdy has. I would agree. He's right up there with Mahomes and Burrow and the best. Because he's not just smart, but he's a hell of a competitor too. And he's poised and he's calm, relaxed. I mean, even like some people might question Justin Herbert's mental makeup. Like, where is your personality? Where is your leadership? Where's your competitiveness? Definitely could throw a football well. So, yeah, I would agree with that with Brock Purdy. That's off the charts for him.
Yeah. And his confidence. If you want to be a quarterback in the NFL, you have to have confidence. I think that's the main thing that Trey Lance lacked. He didn't have that confidence. Brock Purdy has that confidence. That comes from experience, comes from his upbringing. Comes from a lot of things, but there's one thing he doesn't lack, and it's confidence. And what's cool about him is he does it in a way that still seems humble, which is hard. That's a tough, narrow line to walk, right? Being confident, but also being humble. And he's a good leader. Like, there's so many impressive things when it comes to Brock Purdy. I was really thinking about it. I'm like, man, I probably am not giving him his proper credit when it comes to the mental side of his job, which is probably the most important thing that there is.
Also, in addition to the mental side, I think he kind of figured out as the season went on and as he had to like find ways to win playoff games where he was trailing, that his legs are a legit weapon and he shouldn't be ashamed of using them. He should actually use them more. They're a big reason why he won the NFC Championship game. And he didn't scramble that much in the Super Bowl where Mahomes did, and that was a big difference in the Super Bowl. So I think he talked about it after the season, and I think he needs to be a little bit more aggressive. Like, yes, you want to sit in the pocket and go through the progression because you got a great play designer and you have a lot of weapons, but you don't have a great offensive line. And if you got to scramble, go ahead and scramble because you're good at it.
Protect yourself and scramble, but he is really good at it. You saw it in the Bengals game. You saw it in a few games this year. Where, like, all of a sudden, he's a scrambler. Like, in the Bengals game, he was just ridiculously good at running. I think on the exit interview with Brock Purdy, he said there's two things he's going to work on. One is his arm strength, because that's obviously something he needs to improve on. Even coming out of college before his UCL injury, that was his known weakness. I think it has improved, and I think it's going to improve even more so this coming year. And the other was his mobility, running the ball. And his mobility was pretty damn good. So if he improves those two things, his arm strength and his mobility, which his mobility was already pretty good, he's going to be a better quarterback. And that doesn't necessarily mean that he's statistically going to improve upon last year. That might be tough to do from an efficiency standpoint. And he might get really confident and almost too confident to where he's taking a little bit too much risk. I could see that bringing his interception numbers up But I think overall he's going to be a better quarterback. And if there's one thing I've learned not to do is doubt Brock Purdy. If Brock Purdy says he's going to improve his arm strength, I believe that he's going to. If he says he's going to improve his mobility, I believe he's going to, because he hasn't given me any reason to not believe that he will do it.
Yeah, and here's why the scrambling's important, because it seems like the book on Brock or the Niners passing game in general, not just him, is if you can play man-to-man coverage, you should. Because if you play zone, you're going to get beat by Debo. You're going to give him free release into your defense. Kyle will scheme up voids, and once he catches the ball, you're screwed. Brock is so good at throwing to spots with anticipation that once he diagnoses what zone you're playing, which he will quite quickly, you're at his mercy. But if you can play man-to-man coverage, Debo's not going to beat that. You know, Kittle isn't always going to beat that. And Purdy doesn't necessarily have the top level arm talent to fit passes into receivers who are tightly covered down the field. But one thing you can do against man-to-man coverage is scramble, because all those DBs are turning and chasing and not looking at the quarterback. And I think that's what we saw when Purdy recognized that he was getting a lot of man-to-man coverage. Like, take off and run. You could get chunk plays. He's a fast guy. I think he needs to be even more aggressive. Like, he could have done more of that in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I agree. The other thing, too, I mean, like, I know defenses are going to – the defenses have a lot of film on Brock Purdy. But Brock Purdy now has a lot of film on Brock Purdy, mm-hmm. which is going to help him and Kyle Shanahan as well, right? Like, he can learn – again, I go back to his mentality. His mentality is his strength. And he's a smart guy, and he's got the right mentality to be an NFL quarterback. Part of that means just getting in the books or the film, so to speak. He's got a lot of film that he can go back and review now. Like, this is what I did wrong. This is how I can improve. And, like, you know, yes, defenses are going to be doing the same thing for Brock Purdy, but Brock Purdy is going to be able to learn from his mistakes and how to approach it, as well as Kyle Shanahan now has a lot more film of Brock Purdy. And Kyle Shanahan will probably be able to cater his offense a little better for Brock as well. So, I mean, again, I don't know if Brock Purdy is going to have the statistical year that he had last year. I think that would be difficult to do. He might improve in some areas. He might get more yards, right? But his interceptions might go up. He might get more touchdowns, but his completion percentage might go down. But either way, I think he's more prepared to play quarterback in the NFL, and he's going to be a better quarterback because of it.
Okay, let's give the top five reasons Brock Purdy will not ball out in 2024. You gave the reasons why he will, so let me take a stab at the reasons why he absolutely will not ball out in 2024.
All right.
One, the Niners have not improved the offensive line. It's not better than last year. It's not worse, but it's still a major issue. And two, Kyle Shanahan has had a pattern of not being able to keep his quarterbacks healthy. He did it last year, which makes me wonder about this year. Can he do it 2 years in a row? Has he ever?
No. He hasn't yet.
No. Three. Debo Samuel and George Kittle are regressing. I'm sorry. They did a whole bunch of nothing in the Super Bowl. And they're very important to this team. Brandon Ayuk's getting better. Christian McCaffrey's still good, although you never know with running backs. But Debo and Kittle, I mean, they'll have their moments. They will have their moments, but what are they really going to do on a week in and week out basis at this point in their careers? And then I feel like the book on Brock is getting better, and maybe it's not just him, but it's the whole team. He started like 25 games, including the playoffs, and his playoff performances weren't that great. I don't know why. He didn't turn the ball over, although he had some near drops. You could blame his weapons. Maybe Debo wasn't good. Maybe Ayuk wasn't good. I don't know, but his quarterback rating was below 90 in all of his playoff games this year. And is that just an aberration, or is it a sign of things to come? I've teams sort of figured out, well, you know, if we play man-to-man coverage, we can take away a bunch of his weapons. I mean, McCaffrey will be tough to cover man-to-man, but he's not going to, if he gets 10 catches, he'll have 100 yards. I mean, he's not going to gouge you. Debo will do nothing against man-to-man coverage. He's regressed. He can't run a go route anymore. I don't know. I'm curious to see, is that four? It might have been only four reasons. I don't know if I can think of a fifth.
I could probably think of a couple, but let me, possible reasons. But I do want to push back on a couple of them. I do agree, same offensive line, but the cohesion of it, there is something to be said for that. They played a whole year together. Maybe this year they'll have a little bit more cohesion. And sure. I'm still hopeful the 49ers find some talent there in the draft. So maybe they do upgrade slightly there. When it comes to Debo, I agree. I don't think Debo is going to get better. I think he's peaked already, and I think he's not going to be a better route runner this coming year. He's not going to be better against man coverage. So there is that.
He was never good against man coverage, but one thing he could do is if you played him aggressive press man coverage, he could run deep. He was fast. Yeah. I don't think he's as fast as he used to be. I don't think he can do that anymore.
Here's the other
thing. Afraid to play to jam Debo. No one's afraid. They used to be.
No. Even guys are calling him out, talking about how bad he is at it. The other thing, I listed it as a positive, but it could actually work against him. His comfortability, his confidence in the offense now, he's known for being a gunslinger. Like, if you look, I mean, not necessarily the kind of gunslinger that throws the ball 60 yards downfield, but a gunslinger as far as, like, let it rip and see what happens. We saw a couple sketchy touchdowns that he threw that could have easily been interception. Maybe his a new level of confidence and comfortability in this offense brings out a little bit more of that from him. Some of the stuff we saw in college where he's just a little bit more riskier than he would in prior years. Maybe, you know, rookie year, last year, he's a little bit conservative. I don't want to turn the ball over. Got to impress coach and my teammates. Maybe this year it's like, hey, I'm that guy. I got to go out and earn this big contract, and I'm going to let it rip. And that could backfire against him. So that is a possibility of one of the reasons why he would not ball out. And the other thing would be the, you know, just the film the defenses have on him. People are going to be studying what the Ravens did to Brock Purdy to affect him and make him look so bad in that game. But if I had to bet, I would bet on the top reasons he will ball out versus not ball out.
Just I got one more reason he won't ball out.
Mm-hmm.
If it rains a lot. It's been raining a lot in Northern California. If it rains in the fall next year, it's all bad. It's all bad. It's his kryptonite. Yeah.
You better hope El Nino does. if we get an El Nino season, that's the best Brock's greatest enemy. Yeah, that part is a little suspect. He has not shown that he can play well in the rain. Maybe what he's doing this year, and again, I trust Brock's mentality and his work ethic. And so maybe what we see from Brock Purdy, or maybe we don't see it, but maybe he takes care of that in this offseason and does what his coach refuses to do in practice, which is practice with a wet ball. So maybe that's an area of improvement we see from Brock.
Yeah, maybe he could do it on his own. Like, your coach won't let you, so you do it.
He can.
Nathan Reyes, has Hayne Plain better than CMC rugby legend? No. Hayne Plain. Dreams 24 says, will Jim Harbaugh's success affect Kyle and Jed, hypothetically, if Jim wins a Super Bowl? I don't know, but I hope so.
Their pride.
Yeah. Spider Rico says, Purdy has shown he can save a bad Kyle play call with his off-schedule play. Kyle needs to ease some control and give Purdy freedom, responsibility to audible. No. Kyle needs to be more controlling.
There's an area where he does need to improve as well. Like, Brock Purdy did not lose that Super Bowl.
No.
But he did have some opportunities to win it. And some opportunities, I think, like a Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, probably would have took advantage of. You know, that third and four with 2 minutes left. Brandon Ayuk was wide open. Had he seen that, anticipated that, that could have won the game for the 49ers. So maybe the studying the film, building his confidence, things like that will help him make those plays in the future.
West Bay Niner Talk says, now that Eagles and Ravens copied Niners with acquiring elite running backs, list 1 through 3 who have the most rushing yards, including CMC.
It's 1 through 3. Who have the most rushing yards? Now that the Eagles and Ravens have copied 49ers with acquiring elite running backs, who will have the most rushing yards?
Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley, CMC. Okay. I'm going to go with 1. Derrick Henry. Yeah. 2. CMC.
CMC. Yeah.
That's and then 3. Saquon. Yeah. I'm with you.
That's how I would have it. I think Kyle might dial CMC back a little bit this year. Maybe that's more of a hope, but I would imagine that he's like, all right, we did that last year. Let's keep you healthy. That's my hope, at least.
Yeah, I think you need to dial it back with everyone except Ayuk, to me. A little less McCaffrey, a little less Debo, a little less Kittle, a whole lot more Ayuk.
I'm going to say this. A little less Debo, more Kittle and Ayuk. Yeah, yeah. I want more Kittle.
Yeah.
I've been wanting more Kittle.
That's true. I mean, two catches for Kittle, you could... Hard to do less than that. Okay, I got bonus topics for you. Yeah. Who's a better head coach, Kyle Shanahan or Dan Campbell?
That's tough because I haven't got to see a lot of Dan Campbell. Now, I'm going to give my honest answer, and people aren't going to like it. Kyle Shanahan has shown that he's a really good offensive coordinator, a good, yes. great play designer.
Top but three.
But from a head coaching standpoint, there's nothing Kyle Shanahan has really done. I mean, unless you want to include roster building, but that's more of the GM side of Kyle Shanahan. He's really good at building roster, good at play design, good play caller, but situational game manager? I mean, Dan's shown a couple mistakes as well in his history, but if I'm a player, I prefer playing for a head coach with Dan Campbell's energy,
right,
and his playing experience. For me, I think it's going to be crazy. I know people are getting mad, but I think it's Dan Campbell, man. He's more of a head coach. Like, when you think of a head coach, you think of a Dan Campbell. You think of a Mike Tomlin. Now, that doesn't mean Kyle Shanahan's not going to win you a lot of games. Obviously, he has. He's won the Super Bowls. But I think a lot of that is mostly because of his roster building and his play call, not necessarily his head coaching ability.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what Dan Campbell eventually does without Ben Johnson. Because kind of like, you know, with Nick Sirianni, people look at him as that type of a coach. And then he lost Shane Steichen. And all of a sudden, that team fell apart. So Campbell, like, definitely a good delegator, motivator, galvanizer, all that stuff. Still, though, don't you kind of get the feeling if he had been coaching the Niners last year, they would have won the Super Bowl?
Well, what I've been saying for a long time is if you combined, and you can use Dan Campbell, but if you combine, my ideal head coaches would be, My ideal coaching crew would be like a head coach like Mike Tomlin, or you could say Dan Campbell, and an offensive coordinator like an Andy Reid or a Kyle Shanahan. If you combine the leadership of a Mike Tomlin, the head coaching ability of a Mike Tomlin with the offensive coordination of a Kyle Shanahan, that's a dream scenario. And Kyle's really good. He's going to win you a lot of games. He's going to build a great roster. He's going to call some amazing plays. But I just tend to look towards guys like Tomlin, Campbell as more – just natural leaders and better head coaches because of it.
Okay, another bonus question. Better head coach, Kyle Shanahan or Jim Harbaugh?
Here's the thing. Same thing, same reason. I think I kind of see Jim Harbaugh in the same light as I see, you know, these guys that I mentioned, Dan Campbell or Mike Tomlin. He's just kind of that natural-born leader. There's a couple different coaching styles that really some players need. Right, like Trey Lance needs Jim Harbaugh. Trey Lance was not a good match for Kyle Shanahan. There's some coaches that will coach you based on what you're showing them. There's some coaches that will inspire that belief in yourself and make you better. And I don't think that's really who Kyle is. Kyle is kind of like the hard-nosed, tough love kind of guy. Whereas like a Jim Harbaugh will look at like a guy like Trey Lance, for example, and build that up early. Like
for Alex Smith.
Right. Like he did for Alex Smith, like he did for Colin Kaepernick. Yeah. Like I coach, again, I always reference this and I know it's not on the scale. I coached basketball for 10 years, you know, kids, right? High school through younger grade kids. One of the things I really tried to focus on was making sure they knew I believed in them more so than they did. And right. that they wanted to live up to that belief that I instilled in them versus if I don't do good, the coach isn't going to play me. It's like a two different coaching styles. I was always for build up the belief in, I believe in you more than you believe in yourself. And then the kids, they feel like they need to live up to that belief that you have in them. And I think Harbaugh's that guy. I think Kyle's the opposite. And I think Trey Lance will have more success if he'd ever had success under a guy like, I'm just using Trey as an example, but there are a lot of players like that. Brock Purdy doesn't need that. Guys like Trey do need that. Like you got to make them believe in themselves before they do. And then they will feel like they want to live up to your belief in them. And Jim Harbaugh is that guy. So for that reason, I would say Jim as a, as overall head coach.
It's going to be interesting to see what older Jim Harbaugh is like in the NFL, because younger Jim Harbaugh was intense. And, you know, those players weren't as enthusiastic when he would say, who's got it better than us? And they would say, nobody in year four as they were in year one. But it seems like he's a little bit more mellowed out. Like, he does relate very well to young athletes since he just won a freaking national championship. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe he's a better coach now than he was 10 years ago. That's kind of interesting. Still, though, like, philosophically, they both want to run the ball. They both really want to be the best run teams in the league.
But one wants an O-line to do it with.
Right. Yeah. Because the way Kyle and his dad run the ball is finesse. Zone blocking is finesse. If you really understand the nature of that block, the reach and run, I mean, you're just trying to basically set screens. You're not trying to blow someone off the ball, pause. You're not trying to displace people on their side of the line of scrimmage. You're just trying to sort of get positioning on them. So you don't have to have dominant offensive linemen. You just have to have guys who aren't bad. And know the system.
But what if you did? What if you combine both? You know?
I know. So that's the difference between them. I mean, like, Harbaugh wants to impose his will, whereas Kyle sort of wants to stay one step ahead. Mm-hmm. I'm good at doing this. Okay, you try to stop it. Okay, now I can counter with. He's like a counter puncher. Jim Harbaugh's not a counter puncher.
No. He just comes straight at you.
Yeah, he'll tell you what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. I'm punching. Right cross. I used to play baseball in high school, and there was this one guy named Chris Perry who ended up going to a local pro day for the Niners as a DN. He was a good athlete in high school, and we were playing fall ball, and he was on the mound telling the batters what he was going to pitch. You know how pitchers do that, like between like fastball, curveball, and that kind of thing. He was just doing this like fastball, curveball.
Love it.
It's like, wow, this guy's good.
Savage. Yeah, little Babe Ruth in him right there. Yeah,
shout out Chris Perry.
Yeah, that's dope. Yeah, no, I agree. And again, I don't think people are gonna mistake this and think I don't think Kyle Shanahan's a bad head coach, because you gotta include his roster building, you gotta include his play call, his play design. He does a lot of things well, but from a strictly head coach standpoint, those things that those guys do are more important for me. That doesn't mean Kyle Shanahan will never win a Super Bowl. I think he's a young dude. He's been close several times. He's got a long coaching career ahead of him. I honestly expect Kyle Shanahan to win a Super Bowl at some point. I don't know when it's going to be, but if he's always competitive and he's always there, I think at some point he will. But those guys are just more. I played for a lot of coaches. I played sports for a long time, and the coaches like Harbaugh, Tomlin, Campbell, I'd prefer to play for those guys.
Kyle is much more like Bill Belichick. Surly.
Right.
Disagreeable.
Right.
Keeps it real. Whatever. Like, I think a lot of people used to say he's the next Bill Belichick, which is kind of funny because all of a sudden Bill Belichick's stock is way down. I think people are looking at him way differently than they did 10 years ago, because Tom Brady won a Super Bowl without him, and he tried to rebuild and fell flat on his face. And I think people are sort of like rewriting that history and saying, well, how good was Bill Belichick, or was the culture of that team, was the leader of that team, Tom? Because
they're old school. They're old school. And I can tell you for a fact, I've seen a lot of it. Old school is old school for a reason. Coaches are evolving. There's a reason why they're new school. You're evolving with the players. People are evolving. Society's evolving. Players are evolving. What it takes to inspire those players is evolving. Kyle Shanahan, Bill Belichick, they're old school dudes. Kyle learned a lot from his dad. He's basically his dad junior, right? Like, they're very old school. And I honestly think you need to evolve with the times. And new school, I think, is going to have more success moving forward. And that's kind of why I prefer those other coaches.
You know who's kind of interesting? You know who gave Kyle Shanahan his start as a coach in the NFL? First coach he coached under.
Yeah, I can't think of it, who it is, but I know you're talking about
John Gruden.
Yeah,
there you know who gave Jim Harbaugh a start as a coach in the NFL?
Was it Gruden?
John Gruden. That's right. Really? So Harbaugh was with Gruden on the Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm wrong. I'm wrong.
Are you?
Sorry, just delete that part.
All right.
Kyle definitely did work for Gruden, but I'm thinking that Harbaugh would have been with the Raiders maybe after Gruden.
Harbaugh seems like a Raider.
Was.
He was a quarterback like a Raider?
For the Raiders for a couple years, and then he went to Santa Barbara. I mean, San Diego.
Seems like a Raider, like a mother effer. Like, he seems like a Raider. Like, he should be, like, you know that pirate logo they used to have? That looks like Jim Harbaugh.
Hey, he should be coaching the Raiders instead of the Chargers.
For should sure. Be. Yeah.
But he's not. Okay, final question.
Yeah.
Are the Warriors going to turn this around and make the playoffs and do something this year? Bonus topic. We're talking basketball. It's almost playoff time.
I'm not convinced. They've won four in a row, and they might end up making the play-in, but they're like a best-case scenario. They make the play-in, win the play-in, exit first round after that. I don't – unfortunately, I think the ship has sailed on the big three, and I don't think they've done a great job in surrounding
– that's my take.
With the pieces he needs. Yeah. If it was me, I would move. I honestly, I'm open to moving on from pretty much everybody on the Warriors outside of Steph Curry.
Yeah, the way I look at it with that team is like, put Klay and Draymond to the side. I don't really have any problem with them. Although Draymond, every other week. But anyway, he's a champion. I think Joe Lacob has done a really, really bad job of putting players around that big three. I mean, Kuminga? Jonathan Kuminga. So what position does he play? Is he a power forward? Because he's not a good rebounder. Or is he a small forward? Because he can't shoot. So I don't know about the Kuminga experiment. I don't even think he has a position. Chris Paul on the team? Like, are you kidding? Who else do they have on? Podzemski? Are you joking?
Yeah,
I mean, 10 years ago, they had legit good role players on this team. Now, who do they have?
They kind of looked at I feel like they looked at Steph and Klay. We got the best two shooters in the NBA, so we don't need shooters, right? And they kind of tried to put pieces around them. They didn't focus enough on shooting, where the Warriors are basically like, we're going to outshoot you with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, whereas now the whole NBA is like, we're going to outshoot you with five dudes.
That's true. They were ahead of the curve on that. Yeah.
Right. So the whole NBA now, everyone can shoot now in the NBA. Where the Warriors, they got two dudes that can do it. And not only that, they kind of, I love Looney, cool dude, champion. He's a backup at best in the NBA. They rode with him too long. They never found a real big that could actually, you know, pick and pop, roll to the basket, alley, you know, like they messed up with the center position for a long time. So it's that, and it's just, thinking that you got the best shooters, you don't need to surround them with shooters. They're missing a lot of athleticism. They got a lot of problems, man. There's no way that they could pass the Denver Nuggets. Zero chance. In a
their front offense is terrible. I think in a lot of ways, they're kind of like the opposite of the Niners, because they won all these championships and their ownership group is really like, thinks that they're geniuses. Where the Niners, the Yorks have been so embarrassed so many times, they're just clinging to Kyle Shanahan as hard as they can. But with the Warriors, they inherited Lacob. He inherits Steph Curry. He hires Jerry West, smart. And they also hire Travis Schlenk. And those guys draft Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. And Joe Lacob thought it was all him. So he sort of pushes these guys out and doesn't really replace them. And now it's him and his son running the front office. And
it's Dunleavy.
Mike Dunleavy, excuse me.
Yeah, Dunleavy now. And I actually think there could be something there with Kuminga. Pod, I'm not sure. I honestly, the guys I really like, what's his name? TJD. I really like him. He finally got an athletic guy that can, you know, dunk the lobs.
TJD.
So I like him. I like the possibility of Kuminga developing. He's done a hell of a job from last year to this year.
Yeah, but it's like the Niners, though. Like, can you really develop guys, or do you need guys who like fill roles?
Well, he's so young. He's 21 years old. So maybe with Kuminga. And then the other guy, man, who I think is really underrated, and people aren't going to agree with this because I posted about it, a lot of people disagree, but GP2 is a mandatory player on this team for me.
Yeah.
He plays great defense. He's extremely athletic, and he's a glue chemistry guy. Every team needs a guy like GP2. Those three guys are Steph Curry.
When they won the Super Bowl. I mean, they won the championship 2 years ago.
I don't think people really realize what kind of a teammate he is. He's an amazing, amazing teammate. And he just builds up your energy, right? So those guys are very important to me. Honestly, those are the three guys and Steph. Those are the guys I would really try to keep those guys intact, and everyone else is on the table. Now, I'd take Klay Thompson back on a low contract.
Right.
You know, if you're going to be a shooter off the bench, if you're going to accept that role and accept a low contract, I'll take Klay back out of respect and all of that. And you can retire a Warrior, but I don't think he's going to take that. Honestly, I think he thinks he deserves more and he might get more somewhere else. But I think honestly, like, it's that Bill Walsh phrase, right? It's better to get rid of players a year early than a year late. And I think out of respect to the big three on the Warriors, they're kind of getting rid of these guys too late. And Wiggins is another guy. Can't rely on
Wiggins. God.
Sometimes he's great. Sometimes he's awful, right? So
he hasn't great in years.
Yeah, he hasn't been.
I don't know what's going on. Yeah, I don't think this team, I don't know. I don't think it's going anywhere.
They're not winning the championship this year. There is one and done, maybe two and done at best. And then they're going to have to really figure it out. And the sad part, Grant, is they're the most expensive team for the second year in a row, and they have the 18th best record in the NBA, something like that.
Something's wrong.
Yeah.
Something is wrong. Paying the wrong guys.
Right.
All right, guys. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you, Ryan. I'll be back in a couple of hours with Larry, 2:30. So stay tuned. I'll be back, maybe wearing a different blazer. I don't know. We'll see.
Never know.
See you guys.